From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Now, two gamers, they were lost on a desert island, and they came across a genie's bottle.
Okay.
They rubbed it and rubbed it and rubbed it, and
then they got the genie's bottle.
Then a genie came out.
I bet it did.
And gave them three wishes. The first guy, he wished for a copy of Twilight Struggle, so the two of them would have something to play together. The second gamer, he was a lot smarter. He wished he was home with his family. But then the first gamer had one wish left. He wished his mate would come back so he could play Twilight Struggle with him.
Aww, isn't that sweet?
There you go.
That's horrible. They both died, surely.
Now, hang on a second. The Dice Man Cometh, baby. Episode 100.
Woohoo! Woot, woot.
Yeah, baby. Episode 100.
On
the 6th of January,
7th.
26th, the 7th of January, although I typed my notes on the 6th of January.
It's all right, Mark, it's only been 100, it's fine.
It's 100 episodes. Who would have believed that we would have got here 100 episodes?
Yes, I agree with that.
I'm Mark.
I'm disappointed, and Garth. I'm Leon as well.
And look, we have got a rip-roaring, hootin-tootin, harmonica-strumming show for you tonight for our 100th episode.
I think Mark's drunk.
Garth.
High on life. So
Garth, what's going on tonight?
Look, let's get this back to our regular scheduled programming. We are going to start with what we've been playing this week. We are going to talk about Kickstarter because we ran out of time last week, as we so often do. We are then going to talk about the last 100 episodes and have a bit of a retrospective just to make us feel
old. Then we're going to have a montage.
Yeah. I'm not going to swear, but yeah. And obviously we're going to talk about our competition because as of this week, our podcasts are now going live again. Woo-hoo! So we need to let people know when this competition is going to end so they can win some loot.
All that and much more. Now, you know the thing about us?
Mm-hmm.
We're not like everybody else.
To me.
There we go. Ignatius Jones live with I'm Not Like Everybody Else, the story of my life. Here with The Diceman Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with Mark, Garth and Leon for episode 100.
I know, on the 7th of January.
So, gentlemen,
mm-hmm.
What have we been playing lately?
Well, Mark, we have been able to tick off one of your most anticipated games for 2016.
I can't believe it. And so early in the year.
And we did it. And what, it must have been the 2nd of January?
Yeah.
So that's not a bad way to kick off your 2016.
Bucket list done.
There you go. You can just relax, go back to your cave, and we'll see you this time next year. So what we had the absolute pleasure of playing this week, thanks to Leon.
You're welcome.
And his infinite money bag of, I don't know, was Time Stories, or T.I.M.E.Stories. So that in itself is a bit of an issue. So this is the game by Space Cowboys, who've published it, designed by Peggy Chassonet and Manuel Rozoy, and that is horrible pronunciation, so I apologise for that. Now, this game has been all over the internet in terms of its hotness, in terms of its mechanics, in terms of its value for money. But what we're going to do is we're going to mix this up a little bit, and we are going to start by doing a talk about the game and the mechanics of this game without actually spoiling the way we played it, because this game is a play once and you're done when you buy the box, because it comes with one preset scenario. You will then be able to buy expansions, won't you, Leon?
I suppose I will, yes.
So let me talk about it first of all. So Time Stories is, and I will start by reading, the Time Agency protects humanity by preventing temporal faults and paradoxes from threatening the fabric of our universe. As temporal agents, you and your team will be sent into the bodies of beings from different worlds or realities to successfully complete the missions given to you. Failure is impossible, as you will be able to go back in time as many times as required. So that in itself gives you a little bit of a head start as to what this game is about, because we are time agents and we're going to be going into different realities to try and solve whatever it is we're tasked to solve. Now, the game is going to start in your home base. So at the beginning of the game, the players are in their home base, and that's where you'll get your mission briefing. So this is where you will get a bit of an idea of what it is that you're expected to do. So the object is then to complete that mission, whatever it happens to be, in as few attempts as possible. Now, an attempt in this game is called a run. Now, a run goes for around about 60 to 90 minutes in our experience. And you will then, at the end of your first run, should you not complete the mission, reset, start again, and go back and go through it again and again and again. And the game is essentially, you will go and do as many runs as you need until you satisfy the victory conditions of the particular scenario that you're going to play. Now, a run is, I guess, defined by temporal units. So temporal units are essentially the time that you have in order to complete this run before, for whatever reason, you've run out of time and you get, I'm going to say, sucked back to your home base, but you're basically going to get taken back to your base and chastised by the powers that be to say, you haven't been good enough, take a breather, get rid of all your stuff, and you're going to start again. Now, the temporal units, they'll be sort of, I guess, on average, 25 to 30 temporal units as you're going to get. Now, that is not the number of turns that you will have, because we'll get to it in a moment, but turns can cost anywhere from no temporal units or no time to potentially four time per action. And that's where it can be, you're just draining away your very precious temporal units. Now, when the temporal units or TU reaches zero, you stop, you restart, and away you go. So that's sort of the basics of the overview of the game, I guess. But what do you actually do while you're playing it? You're going to start by choosing your host. Now, we had, was it about 8 or 10 particular hosts on the first scenario that we had to choose from?
8, and I think it's going to always be 8, because you're supposed to play with 4 people, so that way, chances are you'll go through a couple of runs, you'll most likely use the whole lot.
I believe,
anyway.
Yeah, so the thing is, because we as the players are not actually in the game ourselves, we have got these hosts to be able to, you know, do our bidding when we go to the whatever time period we're going to. These characters have a whole bunch of character traits, so they're always going to have red, green, and yellow traits, whatever they are then defined in the scenario that you're playing. And that will be determined by your mission briefing. Your mission briefing, one of the cards will tell you, in this particular scenario, the red means this stat, the yellow means this stat, and the green means another stat. And that'll basically come down to, during the game, the number of dice that you're going to roll.
Yeah, so it's not a... For those that have seen Continuum or even the 12 Monkeys TV show, it's not where your body is physically transported back to the time. It's more like, was it Quantum Leap, the TV show where
you inhabit a
Dennis
body?
Dennis Quaid, basically, your mind goes back and takes over another body that's there. So from the outside, you just look like a person who's in that time
period. Exactly right. So you will get this body and you get to choose that. We will talk about, you know, the options that we had later on in the show, I guess. So each character, they'll have their stats. So they'll have their hit points, which generally not too many. You'll have what your defense capabilities are. Then you'll have your unique attributes. And this is where, because you're inhabiting someone else's body, they have certain character flaws, be it good, bad, ugly, pretty, something in that way, which will affect the way that each individual character is played through the course of the game. And then you also may get some starting items depending on the scenario that you're playing. Once you've done that, you then read your mission briefing, find out what the hell it is you've got to try and do, and then you start, and you will start by going into the first room, the first scenario that you then have to talk about, and that will be laid out by a series of cards that form up this really beautiful panorama.
Yes.
Where you will go into. And we should probably just stop there, because I'm going to beat you to it, Mark, and say, the art in this game is pretty awesome.
It is. And I, you know, when you compare this to, say, another story-driven game like Pandemic Legacy or like Arabian Nights, you know, with that, it's all in the text, it's all in the reading, and it's all in the, I guess, the playing. I mean, Pandemic Legacy, really, when you're looking at the board, you've got a board that's mostly the same as the normal game with cubes and a map and stuff. In this game, you've got these amazing pictures, the panoramas laid out with four, five, six, seven cards. You know, they all join together to make these beautiful pictures that also lay out how you interact. So they might have other people in them. They might have things you can interact with. And you choose where you're going in a particular area by choosing to go to a particular card. Mm-hmm. And then in most cases, you'll flip the card over. You'll read the card. I do like that it's not a case of you then read it out to everyone, but it's a case of, okay, I'm the person who went to that location or spoke to that person or interacted with that thing. I then report back to the group, because it is a cooperative game. I report back to the group the things that I think are important, perhaps the conversations that happened or what I found, but it's not, oh, I pick up a card and I read.
Yeah, so it's trying to be more of that RPG style where you are putting as much or as little of your chosen character, or in the game they're called receptacles, the beings that you're inhabiting, and you can choose to be as detailed or as vague as you want. But because it is a cooperative game, you'll be surprised how much information you can glean from these cards by reading the text and trying to relay it to your team, by trying to, you know, look at little every clue that's on the card and see, well, there's a this symbol and a that in that corner, and is that important or is it not? I think it makes it really quite interesting. I guess we're going to talk about that a bit more when we spoil the first scenario, which is called Asylum, which is the one that comes with the base game. But I just want to start by saying this game is really interesting, and it's unlike something that I've played in a long, long time. I like the fact that the board is replayable as much as there are scenarios to bring it out. I really like the fact that the box insert is designed as a save point mechanic.
Yeah, very clever.
Because you will play this game potentially for between, what, Leon, 3 to 5 hours maybe in a scenario?
5 hours on the dot was our playthrough learning it the first time. So I would assume other ones, if they're more difficult, could be the same time. If they're the same type of scenario, because we know the game, might be a bit shorter. But yeah, it's a big chunk of change.
Sure. So not everyone can dedicate that amount of time back to back. So to be able to have a insert where you can essentially freeze at any point in your run and stop and say, well, let's go and play something else for a little while. We'll come back to it. Because from a thematic sense, at the end of every run, all of the items that you've gathered during that run, be them important or not, they're gone. You don't get to keep them because you're not really there, so you don't get to take them back to your home base to talk to your boss and say, well, yeah, I've got this item now that's going to be really useful for my next time. You have to start from scratch and replay your steps when you go there, albeit with a bit of extra knowledge.
Yes.
And hopefully a bit of a more inside run as to how it is you're going to do it efficiently. And that's where this game becomes really interesting, is how you take the lessons that you've learnt from, say, the first run and apply them to the second or potentially the third and on and on and on to ultimately try and solve that case.
Yeah, look, I have to say I enjoyed this game so much. I mean, I had watched the review that Shut Up and Sit Down did where they were sort of quite disappointed and laboured on for quite a bit about what poor value this game was because it was so expensive. Look, I had a funny situation. It might have been on the Monday after we played it on the Saturday, and I actually happened to work with someone who games with you, Leon, regularly.
Yes.
And he said, oh, I heard you guys played that game. And, you know, it's on my lunch break. I'm on a limited amount of time. I talked about it for about 15 minutes. No spoilers, no nothing. I was surprised myself how excited and how enthusiastic I was in talking about it. And I could see this guy and his friend, who I think is also going to maybe get to play it.
Yes.
I talked to them about renting it off you, Leon, because we do need to get some money back.
It's not a bad idea.
Yeah. you know, like the look on their face as I was describing it, like they were salivating. They couldn't wait to play it. And look, I totally loved it. I mean, I'm a big one for immersive games. I love role-playing. This is really immersive. Yeah, it was a little bit clunky at the start to get the hang of how the how you interact and how things happen in the game. But look, I cannot wait to play the next scenario. And man, I could play these sort of games every day. I found it amazing. The art just really was evocative of the time periods. I mean, it's common knowledge. It's 1920s.
Yep.
The art was fantastic. The way the cards lay out these panoramas, you really get sucked in like you are there. The flavor text, like I could go on and on about how much I enjoyed this game.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed it too. I did have a few qualms with us, which I'm sure I'll bring up later. But I mostly enjoyed it as well. And the good thing you mentioned about how good the art is, that every single scenario will have different art.
Yeah.
Because every scenario is done by a different designer who also works with a different writer if they don't do it themselves. So the game will be, even though the core mechanics will be relatively similar, it will be different every single time you play it.
Hmm.
And another thing about the value for money that has been one of the things that has been most importantly talked about with this game is that, as Mark said, I've got at least two other groups of four that I know of that want to get this off me so they can play it. Yeah. And then if I get an expansion, it'll be the same thing. They'll probably want to play it through with that four again and so on and so forth.
Yep.
So if you are a part of a local game group, which I'm sure most of our listeners probably would be at some respect, all you would need is probably to get one copy of it and share it amongst
Absolutely.
Everybody else. And you say it's not value for money. Well, if you share that amongst three or four different groups, that's like, it's like, you know, a fiver a person for 5 hours worth of a game. So, yeah, it's kind of a moot point to say that it's a bit expensive and you don't get what out of it, because it's the experience that's what matters.
Definitely.
And a game like this to share around, I think, is a really good idea. And I love an RPG myself, but the creativity of coming up with them sometimes, it can be rather daunting.
Yes.
And a lot of people would, I think, love to get into that kind of stuff, but just don't have it in them to put pen to paper sometimes. They might have a million ideas in their head, but getting it down is really difficult. And here it is in a box for you.
No, so we're going to come back at the end of the show with a special spoilers edition to talk a bit more about this game. We'll give plenty of warning before it starts. And when we put out the podcast again, like we have with Pandemic Legacy, we'll put out the two different versions. Now, we also, and it was an epic task, we also actually recorded the whole game. Now, I don't know if anyone's going to want to listen to the whole 5 hours.
It's not 5 hours now.
Oh, isn't it?
Once I took out the silence and the kind of breaks of not much, it's under 4 hours.
Oh, okay.
But that's with I accidentally took out a bit too much silence, so it is just nonstop us for 4 hours with literally not a breath of a break. Which,
who wouldn't want to listen to nonstop us for
we
4 hours?
Put that on a DVD.
I didn't want to listen to it all.
Anyway, so we'll make that available online if people do want to listen, and if they don't want to play through themselves, we'll come back and talk about that and some other stuff right after this. That was the Kings of Leon with Four Kicks on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh, Mark Guth, and the King of Leon himself.
That's me. It's been a couple of weeks since he did that. It was last year.
Now, King of Leon.
Yes.
You've been checking out all those things to buy, and particularly those crowdfunded things to buy, on that Kickstarter website, haven't you?
I have been. I've been perusing as much as I can, even though of late there has been, I don't want to say the word wasteland, but there's been very, very little of late. But luckily, in the last week or two, it has pepped up a bit, so which is good, because a few weeks ago when you asked me to do an update, pretty much wasn't going to happen, because I just could not find anything that interests me at all. So we will start off by a game that was the first one that interested me, because I think I waited maybe 2 days to check Kickstarter, and then when I did, this game was on there and had already made, I think, about $80,000?
Yeah, funded in under 12 hours.
In 12 hours. Mm. And that is Victory Point Games, the second edition of Nemo's War, which is a game, the artwork very reminiscent of Robinson Crusoe, I believe.
Yep.
And it's where you take the role of Captain Nemo and you set sail in the famous ship, the Nautilus, based off the famous book 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle?
Jules Verne. Sherlock Holmes was Arthur.
I was going to ask
that's
you about...
Right.
Ask you about Dory's War. What about Dory's War?
That's coming up next year.
Anyway, so I had a look into this game, and as I said, the artwork and the way the game plays did remind me a bit of Robinson Crusoe, but then I discovered something while watching the video halfway through it. I thought, hang on, is this a this is a solo game. This is I've heard of these. These are those games that people play by themselves.
Not just people. Mark, that person plays.
That person right there, which means Leon doesn't have to buy it, Mark can buy it. So yeah, and I looked at that and went, oh, that's very, very interesting. Mainly because, as I said, it funded like $80,000 in 12 hours.
Yep.
So the idea of people playing solitaire by themselves is still a big deal.
Exactly. And it's $120,000 now, so wow. People continue. There's still 20 days to go in this campaign.
Yeah, and all the stretch goals for all the different nice components and stuff have all been unlocked, so the game is there now, pretty as you like, ready to go.
Yep.
And from all the different reviews that I read, apparently that the first edition was quite well received, and this edition is just a pepped up version of that, which is why it went so hot so quick.
Excellent.
So that, I think, is definitely one to look out for. And anybody that's interested in a solo game, there's... must say, a lot of them I've looked into have kind of gone, yeah, but if there's anyone to kind of sway me, this looked like the one that might do it.
Yeah. And that's a Kickstarter?
It is a Kickstarter.
Yeah. Oh, I just wanted to drop them beats.
Yeah, you're still youngin' with it, Mark. But what this also has is a little Aussie connection by our possibly favourite artist, Ian O'Toole.
Oh, yeah.
So he's done the art for this, who is... basically known now for Gallerist. He's going to be helping out with Vinyos and also Lisboa, another couple of the upcoming Vital Lacerda games. Look, as far as solo games go, it's only something I have done when I've been trying to play a game to figure out the rules. So I started by doing Flip City, a couple of solo scenarios. I started with K2 in the solo play. There's only two games that have interested me with that. The first one would have been Hostage Negotiator, which was a Kickstarter from... either 2015 or probably 2014. The theme, obviously, is you're a hostage negotiator trying to get people out and save them.
I've heard of that, and it has many an expansion, I believe.
It does, yeah.
Which is what interests me. I was like, okay, it's a solo game, fair enough. And then I was, here's all these different things for it.
Mm.
Interesting.
But this one sounds interesting. I haven't done a lot of research into it, but I reckon it would be probably a good one because it also looks pretty... time intense. It goes for an hour to two. It's not cheap. It's about $100 if you want the... $50 plus postage if you want it. But it says it goes for about 2 hours. So.
Yeah, and it looks like it's got lots of replay value in it because lots of different things will happen on your adventure that won't happen other times.
Yep.
So it's definitely one to look into.
Excellent. Do you want to go again or you want me to have a go?
You can have a crack.
All right. So I did a little bit of research as well and I had a look at The Ninth World, a skill-building game for Numenera. Now, Mark, have you heard of Numenera?
It's a role-playing game, I believe.
It is. Now, this is it's a one-part deck builder, one-part Euro, and one-part RPG.
Ooh.
So it's got a bit of everything in there. It's a competitive card game for 2 to 5 players. It's by Lone Shark Games, and there's one big name that is endorsing this, and it's Mike Solinka.
Of course, the Pathfinder man.
Exactly right. So this is particularly up Mark's alley. Essentially, it is set in the Numenera universe. Heroes are going to explore the 9 kingdoms of the Steadfast. Obviously, all of those 9 kingdoms are very, very different. So you're basically going in as a kind of a exploration Euro in the Numenera universe. You'll be fighting creatures, doing all kinds of things. It's smashed it. It's doing really, really well. Again, it was only going for about $50,000, which is relatively small for, I guess, the intellectual property that is Numenera. A lot of people know it. It's got just over a week to go, $77,000. So it's approaching 1,000 backers now. It's around about that $50-$60 again, plus postage. But it looks fantastic and something that, is just a slightly different, I guess, interpretation of Numenera, which is great. And obviously with names like Mike Solinka at the helm, you'd think this would be pretty damn good.
Yeah, well, obviously he's got a lot of pedigree there, that's for sure.
Yeah, so that would be one that I'd sort of suggest you check out.
Yeah.
Leon?
Any more?
Yes, there is plenty more, but I like the cut of your jib, young Garth. I think you should go again.
Okay, well, I'm going to go then and do a little bit of a... GG, because GG are not only my initials, but it is also a 15-minute strategy game. And I don't know what the GG means, but it's probably very good. It's a 15-minute epic battle. And now it says it is of strategy, memory, and deception. But essentially, it is a deck of cards that encourages you to play rock, paper, scissors. So is that a game that you've ever read the rule book for, Mark?
rock, paper, scissors? Yeah. Is there a rule book for
that? I'm sure there is. But look, essentially, you've got two sets of 32 decks of cards. You can get a couple more decks along here. You get 91 cards. And you're going to try and essentially be doing rock, paper, scissors with decks of cards. Mm. Each of them rock, paper, scissors are then... You've got weak rock, middle rock, hard rock, and you're trying to out-rock everyone. Right. So, look, it's a little 15-minute game. It's very, very good value. It's only about $10 if you want to get this, and it ships everywhere, which is fantastic. You get this. It has succeeded very, very well. It was going for $4,000. It's got $55,000, so it smashed it. There's only 3 days to go, so you really want to get onto this quickly. If a nice little quick party game is your thing.
And that's a Kickstarter as well.
They're all Kickstarters.
Love kick starts again. I love this new thing that we're doing.
Yeah, I know.
It's episode 100. Everything old is new again.
Woo! Leon.
Woo woo! Scratching. Waka 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 waka.
How do we mute his microphone?
I don't know. He's got all the buttons.
It's times like this you wish you learned the buttons, gents.
No, we don't. Go.
Okay, Dead Man's Draw, the deluxe tin box card game. It was on Kickstarter a couple of months ago, the original version of Dead Man's Draw, and it was successful, and then they thought, why not? We'll do a deluxe version, and we'll make the art 20 times better. It's a small set collection game, I believe, and yeah, as I said, the art is about 20 times better than what it used to be, because I looked at the previous one and went, that's not bad, but meh. Whereas this one, it's very, very shiny, and I do love a metal tin edition of any game. It was funded in 6 hours, and it's still got 22 days left.
Yep.
It's coming from Mayday Games, so those guys have got a pretty good pedigree behind them. And it's a very small game as well, so you can only get it, I think it's only about $20-odd, and then the shipping was about $8 or so to Australia.
Yep.
So a nice little one to fill in, I think, for the family as well.
All right, I just want to mention one really, really quickly, purely because it was interesting, and that is that the Kingdom Builder Marshlands expansion, Kingdom Builder Donald X Vaccarino, went out again after being cancelled because of the fight between Donald X Vaccarino and Queen Games over the rights of it and what have you. It was going for $10,000. It's got $125,000 so far, only 13 hours to go. If you're like a Kingdom Builder, this is probably the easiest way to get the expansion, but traditionally Queen Games postage is ridiculous.
Yeah, okay. Well, look, let's come back in a minute. We're going to lump a few things together about our old shows.
Wow, that was lumped by the presidents of the United States of America. I love those guys way back in the something 90s. Were you alive then, Leon?
I was a small child, yeah. But my sister was mad for that album, so it's ingrained in my memory.
Well, there you go. Now, the fact that we have turned 100, some would say gracefully, some would say not, sort of it just makes me feel a bit old, makes me feel a bit decrepit. But at least I've got the memories of the 100.
Memories.
Now, Mark's done a little bit of research, a little bit of listening to every episode again just to make sure he's got some radio that fit to, I guess, publish again. So, Mark, do you want to start us with a little walk down memory lane?
This is Edge Radio 99.3 FM. The Dice Men cometh here on our first show this evening. Look, we just want to say thank you very, very much to Tim and to Pete from The Ride for making us feel welcome and for just helping us negotiate the equipment here while we step in for our very first show on this brand new season on Edge Radio. My name's Trent.
And I'm Mark. And it's great to be here with you tonight. We've stumbled into the studio. We've kicked a few things over. We've switched on microphones when they're not meant to be switched on. And now we're talking out over the airwaves and it's scary. Now, Trent, I want to address the elephant in the room.
The what?
The elephant in the room.
Hang on, excuse me.
No. I was making not a comment about your size.
I've been working quite hard on my weight. Thank you very much.
Our name, The Dice Men Cometh. Now, people have been commenting about it on Facebook.
Well, we ran a little bit of a competition just amongst the members of the Hobart Game Society about what we should actually call our show. And I think we came up with... It was going to be Of Dice and Men.
Yes.
At one point.
Some classic.
I wanted to call it. I just diced in your arms tonight, but I couldn't get anyone to agree to that.
You out there, I'm sure, will come up with much better names than we ever could. But one of the things is, and it's been raised by our, I don't like to call them fans, people who who bother to tune in or communicate with us.
Yes, people we have to convince.
That's right. Those grammar Nazis out there that, of course, Gummoth is the archaic third-person singular present tense suffix. And clearly, there is two of us. But I ask you, who is going to tune in and listen to the Dice Men Come?
I'm not going near that one.
Wow. Just think, Leon. That was how this baby was born, with a high degree of professionalism, yes. Respect. Apparently, before they even had their first show, and this is before we were involved, they had fans already.
Yep, so I've been told.
Yeah.
I wonder where they went to.
Considering, is that your mum's?
Who knows?
Yeah?
Who knows? People were communicating with us, you know, on the Facebooks.
Yes, well, I remember I did play a part. I did vote for one of the half a dozen suggested names.
Which one did you vote for?
It wasn't the Dice Men Cometh. I can't remember what it was.
I don't know. Look, and we were lucky enough, for a while there, Garth, you came on board to assist us, and you were our executive vice producer in charge of arranging interviews.
Yeah.
And look, we, just looking back, you know, we have interviewed some comedians, Tommy Dean and Ben McKenzie. We've talked about many, many, many Kickstarters. We've talked about BorderCon, CanCon, PAX, MeepleCon, Sydney Toy and Game Expo, Concentric, Winter Games Fest and DieCon, Gen Con, Essen, The Gathering of Friends. We've had people that have been to all those cons all around the world and talked to us. We've had various gaming luminaries like Universal Head. We've had staff from friendly local game stores, not just here in Hobart, but around Australia. And Garth, you did arrange for us some very famous designers. People like Peter Hawes, Matt Dunstan,
yep.
Jonathan Gilmore twice, Paul Dean from Shut Up and Sit Down, Tom Vassell, who is that guy?
Yeah.
Bruno Cathala.
Wow.
As well as Phil Walker Harding, David Harding, and Alan Chang.
Exactly.
But then, Garth, you made the big decision, didn't you?
I think I had to come on and just talk about it all myself.
Right. Trent, I think it's about to finish. Oh, no, I've just realised that I can't talk and play the ukulele at the same time.
Just play!
Okay. Oh, no, what? No, that's... How's it start? It goes...
The Dice Men Cometh!
I'm serious. I can't talk and play the ukulele at the same time. You've got to do the intro to the show.
Oh, it's The Dice Men Cometh, the show when two guys, now three guys, talk about games and cards and games and stuff and... I don't know. You always do the star bit. I can't do the star bit. You always do the star bit, Trent.
Wow, what an introduction. Oh, I'm glad to be here, by the way.
50 episodes! Woo!
Oh, that's enough of that. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, this is Edge Radio 99.3 FM. My name's Trent.
I'm Mark.
And we have tonight, on our 50th episode, at the end of what's been a big year for us, the great pleasure of introducing a brand new member of the Dice Men team, although you've heard him on the show before. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Garth.
Yay, Garth!
Party on? No, we can't go that too early. Sorry, guys.
And it is a little bit of a special episode tonight. Hang on, you've got to say what's coming up.
Sure.
You've got to say it's a jam-packed show, an action-packed show.
And laugh a bit.
And I'll just keep playing the...
Yeah, okay, yeah. Cool, go. Here we are with another jam-packed show for you tonight on the Dice Men Cometh. We're going to be having an interview with Matt Udding from MeepleCon, but first, we're going to count down our top five games. All that and more tonight on the Dice Men Cometh. But first, coming up, the usual heavy metal track. Insert heavy metal track here.
Wow, this show used to be quite good, didn't it?
Yeah, it was funny for a little while there, wasn't it?
When did the dip happen?
Well, maybe... Maybe
called me a dip.
Maybe it happened about episode 83.
Oh no.
Be there.
And we'll be there with the Kings of Leon on call. You're with Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh with Mark and Garth and our special guest. He is the King of Leon.
Oh God.
His name is Leon. Leon, how are you?
Hello. Very good, gentlemen. Yourself?
Oh, look, we're really well, apart from me pressing the wrong button.
I noticed.
But hey, it was bound to happen.
Exactly. And look, it always does.
Leon, I must say, that is the quietest that I've ever seen you ever. You sat there beautifully quiet for half an hour, listening to us jibber-jabber on. Must have been really difficult, actually.
Well, I've been up since about 5 in the morning, and I haven't really sat down at all, except for the drive here, so...
Yeah, and I did see that it was putting his time to good use, checking out Kickstarter. Yeah. So
I'm not here for a haircut, gentlemen. Well, look, I've already got that sorted.
Firstly, Leon, you are a real Oompa Loompa, aren't you? Because you work at the chocolate factory.
You could call it that. I'm a married man now, so I'm just a factory worker. Oh. In my single days, though, I was a chocolate chef.
There you go.
But now, lovely wife at home, I'm just a factory worker.
Oh, there you go. Now,
still living the dream.
Absolutely.
Free chocolate?
Yeah.
God damn it.
Actually, you don't get so much free chocolate these days, do you? Because they recycle everything.
Yeah, but they're not looking all the time.
There we had it. Just a brief look back at a couple of key moments there in the show. Back now, in the days where we were funny.
Exactly. And I do want to just let everyone out there in Radioland know that Leon has had another haircut.
I have.
So,
and Mark used that shocking intro to me as well.
Yeah, so I just did some maths here, and apparently you get a haircut every 4 months. So that's pretty good.
Yeah.
There you go. Not to mention a plethora of chocolate, because Mark and I have had, unfortunately... about 500 kilos of chocolate we've had to get rid of in the last couple of days. So that's been a really good problem to have. But it's been great. I've loved the last 100 episodes because Leon and I were talking in that we have both listened to every single episode before we were lucky enough to be plucked from obscurity and put on the show.
Nerds, right?
Exactly. And look, it's obviously a pretty big milestone for us because we were talking about it earlier, Mark, that we've been on for around, 110 weeks since you guys did the very first show.
That's right. The first show was at the end of November
2013.
Mm. So it's only just over 2 years. Obviously, there's 52 weeks in a year, and we've done 100 episodes in just over 2 years. So we haven't missed many weeks at all. I don't know many other shows that pump out. Maybe they pump out quality, but they don't pump out quantity like that. Exactly. And let's face it. It's all about the numbers.
Definitely. That's something that we've learned in 100 episodes of board gaming. Now, we should probably stop talking about ourselves, play a song, come back, and start spoiling time stories. That was ABC with Beauty Stab. You are with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3. Now, this is an official warning. This is a spoiler. We are going to start spoilering Season 1, Scenario 1 of Time Stories.
Spoiler alert.
We are going to start spoilering The Asylum, which is the campaign that comes with the box. I'll now count down 3, 2, 1, so that whoever wants to edit out this podcast can do so. Thanks, Dave. And then we're going to start spoilering it. 3, 2, 1...
It was the girl at the start that's painting the manticore. She wants to raise demons. There, 5 hours. Five hours saved.
All done in one breath.
Exactly. And we don't really know why she wanted to raise demons or why we were even there in the first place. But we did it.
Exactly right. Now
she was mad. That's why she was in the asylum, clearly.
Yeah, so were we. We were cannibals and such.
No. That was our receptacles. That was them. We were perfectly sane human beings.
We didn't actually eat anybody with her.
Well, there was nothing to say that maybe we weren't cannibals. Maybe people are cannibals in the future.
That's true.
Maybe meat gets scarce.
Yeah, so
bacon is good.
Let's just roll back a little bit here, guys. So we're talking about The Asylum, which is the very first out-of-the-box campaign that comes with Time Stories. Now, just what is a scenario? Because they're going to be... Well, there's already two, is there, Leon?
I believe there's the
Marcy case.
The Marcy case is out, and I think the Dragon one may have just been released in the States.
Sure. So these campaigns are small box ones. They will come with about 120 to 150 cards of various types. So arguably there'll be new characters. There will certainly be new item decks and what have you. You will then have a new home base, which is where you're going to find out about the mission briefing. And then you're going to have the remainder of the cards, how many that be, of the various potential locations that you can visit. So that's what you're going to get in the expansions. Now, in The Asylum, We are in a 19th century asylum is where we were sent back to.
This is 1920-ish,
yeah, so that would, I believe. That would be a 20th century one. Yeah. Sorry, getting my 19s mixed up. We were under the guise of being five inmates there. So in terms of our receptacles, they were all kind of flawed. We had cannibals. We had plenty of crazy people. We had schizophreniacs. We had a bit of everyone in the mix. And straight off the bat, talk about a great way to get yourselves immersed into a storyline is being part of the infrastructure of the asylum. So I thought that was a great way to start. Even the conversation we had about who's going to be who, we didn't talk about min-maxing at all. You know, we actually, the first run we did, we did a completely random shuffle the characters underneath the desk. What number card do you want to be? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, you're going to be the cannibal. You're going to be the weird looking alien kind of guy. The war veteran who had his face blown. That's the one. Yeah. So as a starting point, like you were talking about RPGs before, Leon, what a great way just to immediately become invested. We all went around in the table saying, this is who I am. These are my stats, but more importantly, this is what I'm good and this is what I'm bad at.
And there was lots of like nice flavor on the cards, the amazing art again.
Yep.
That little girl with the big smile and the blood around the edges of her mouth, like just dripping with theme this game.
I was a sex addict.
What about your character, Leon?
No. Hey. Also a sex addict, but with nicer boobs.
So yeah, we went straight into the day room. That was where we were. We were sent by Bob.
Oh, Bob,
who was in charge of our mission. Who was a very gruff-looking guy.
Well, he was friendly at the start, but we kept cocking up.
Exactly.
And he didn't expect to have us come back and go, "Oh, we failed." And so, back you go again. So he did lose his temper a little bit, old Bob.
Exactly. But we went into the day room, and immediately the way that this works is that the locations are set up in a panorama of probably about, I guess, average of 4 to 7 cards, about half a dozen cards. And you all, as a team, have to be in the same location. You have to be in this same room, the day room. But where you go is completely up to you because each card is a separate part of that room.
Yeah.
So you might have a card that is chatting with the, in this case, the nurse who's in charge of the room. The second one was a person who's, he had trumpet on his head or like trumpets for ears and he was sitting on the lounge and he looked a bit weird. Then you have the third one, which you've talked about, Leon, which is a crazy, looks like the girl from The Ring doing a painting. Then you had someone else sitting on the lounge who had a costume look like he was from Spy vs. Spy. And then the last one was just a piano. And as each player, you could choose where you went to and that would mean you get to peek at the bottom of the card, read it, and then tell everyone else what it is that you were seeing. We just went straight in there. We were right in that asylum.
And look, you're so much, just like the old point-and-click adventures, you want to go everywhere and click on everything.
Yep.
But the thing about this game is you don't have the time to go everywhere, talk to everyone and click on everything. So you sort of got to decide, but at least you've got the freedom of, oh, well, it'd be really nice to solve it on the first run, but let's face it, what are the chances of that?
Yeah.
So to me, again, it did evoke that sort of point-and-click adventure. And, oh, look, we found something, and I wonder where we're going to find that useful.
Exactly right. So, look, that's, we don't obviously have to talk about all the rooms that you go for, but the thing is you have to decide as a team to go to the next room before you can go there. There is a time leader or whatever who can break ties.
Captain.
Yeah, exactly right, if people disagree. But you'll go into there, you'll investigate the rooms, you will find a lot of interesting items along the way. You will find, let's talk about keys. We'll find plungers. You will find
cocaine.
You'll find certain weapons. All of these interesting things. Ultimately, it leads you down the path of solving this crime, which was a very interesting puzzle to solve. And look, we did it in our third run. Which I think most people have been able to do looking at the reviews so far.
I don't know anybody that first plays this that could do it in the first two.
No.
I mean, I'm sure it's possible, but I'd be very, very surprised.
I think it would have to be a massive stroke of luck because it's, you have to first do A, then do B, then do C, then do E to follow the path.
Yeah.
And as we found, you know, in the second run, you then think, okay, well, we'll go and do these few things first because that'll then give us the things we need to go and speak to these people. But then that still doesn't work out how you quite expect. And that interesting mechanic with the state tokens, is it?
Yeah, the little event tokens.
Where you might flip over a panorama and there might be four places you can go and then three cards you can't go, and they've got these little symbols on them, which mean you have to have found those markers, and often those markers weren't even in the room. You had to go to another room to get the marker to be able to, if you like, unlock those particular areas.
Exactly right. So you have to have, I guess, fulfilled certain criteria to be able to get them, normally in different rooms or in different areas or speaking to different people. So, look, the mechanics of it, I guess, you know, we've already talked about those. The story itself is very, very immersive. What I wanted to talk about is the run, which is the way we played it, which is basically do it all in one five-hour stretch.
Yeah.
What do you guys think? Did we do it right by going back to back to back to back? Because personally, I think I would have enjoyed this more had we stopped after a run and done something else. Because my concern with this game is that we... Look, our first run went for about an hour and a half. Our second run went for about 20 to 30 minutes because we did that. Okay, we've got that key, we've done this, we've done that. Our third run then, which is the run where temporal units don't really matter as much because you don't have the limiting 25 that it's already set out for you. I personally would rather play this episodically and play it once, one run per every couple of days or every week, so that the last run isn't fresh in my mind. I'm curious to see what you guys think of that.
I think we should give it a try, just and then see where we go from there. It's definitely worth an idea, because as I said, as we were playing it, just when we got to the end, which we did win, but we were one card away from failing.
Yep.
And on the recording, you can hear it. I straight away said, if we'd have failed this, I would have sold this game tomorrow. Because I wasn't a big fan of the having to do things over and over and over and over again, especially doing it all in one night and learning the game as well. So you're a little bit tired from doing all that. So the having to do things repeatedly over and over again can get to some people, and I'd imagine it would be the downfall in some groups, but I think the rest of the game makes up for that one little flaw, so it's definitely worth keep on going.
My concern about not doing it that way is, I mean, already, Garth, you were taking quite good notes. If you're going to then come back to it days later, where your memory, particularly if you're a bit older like me, your memory's a bit foggy, your notes would have to be immaculate, I think, because, you know, one misstep and potentially you stuff up the run and you're back to the scratch again. So I'd certainly be interested to play it and see how different it feels to do that. But I don't know, that's my big concern on that one.
Yeah, so my counter argument to that would be, thematically, you're going by your memory. Yeah. And as we are investigators, in essence, trying to solve that, thematically, you should allow a little bit of haziness to go in there. And I guess this is the challenge for us as gamers who like to get a result and like to win.
Mm.
At a game like this where there is so much talk about is it value for money, I think we're going to be increasing the value for money if we do have a little bit of a pause between runs. Even if it's just play a couple of games of Codenames or something in between it, just so that it isn't, all right, we've got to go to this room and do this. We've got to do that room and do that. We've got to do that room and that room. I have a sneaking suspicion it'll add to it.
As usual, no surprise, we have run out of time. We're going to get right out of here right now. Thank you so much for joining us on episode 100. We'll talk about the competition on Facebook.
Yeah.
See you all later. Bye.
Bye.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.